Okay, so what we'll do, the final thing we'll do in the conceptual model is to talk about how to validate the model. As the English would say, the proof of the pudding lies in the eating. So in the end, the final validation will be the actual applications we can develop when we have this database. But it would be good if you can validate the model before we have developed everything and find that there were some problems with it. So that's why we would like to try to validate the model and typically look for known problems, and also try to see the typical queries we have, are we able to answer them using the current model. So conceptual modeling, we are done by the end of the day today, and then next week Dipti is going to talk about normalization. The logical model next time, and then normalization the week after. Sorry, so you're going to do the logical model next week. There are two typical problems we can have in conceptual models, and we'll talk about them. They're called the fan trap and chasm trap. They are kind of similar, but at the same time they are a bit different. But the problem will be that we won't be able to connect the type of information that we would like to connect. We can talk about them first, and then we can I'll talk about how we can, from the conceptual model, how we can validate whether or not it can be used to answer some of the typical queries we will have, or transactions, as the book calls it. So, what is a fan trap? So you know what a fan is. So it's fanning out. So it comes from one place and it fans out. And the fan trap is where we can't really decide, because it could go to one or many many links, and we don't know which link actually we are talking about. So if we would like to know exactly the one, and we have a fan like that, we couldn't say exactly which one is related to. Let's probably easier to see if you look at the example. So let's have this model. What we like to express is that a faculty has staff members, and faculty also runs several projects. So projects are owned by the faculty, and staff is employed and affiliated with the faculty. That's the easy part. Now, how can we use this model to say which staff is working on which projects? We know which projects is affiliated with a certain faculty, and we know which faculty the staff is affiliated with. But we couldn't say, because if a faculty has 10 projects and 100 employees, we won't know which project a certain employee is working on. We can't, because it's fanning. You see the fans? So on one side, the faculty owns both. So it's easy. We can find from a project, we can find the faculty. From an employee, we can find the faculty. But from the faculty, we can't tell exactly which people were involved in the project. Or from a faculty, we can't say what projects a certain person is working on, because it's fanning out. So this way of modeling will make it impossible to connect staff directly to projects. If we want to, and if we need to, and typically we would like to know what projects a certain person worked on. This is the occurrence diagram. So as you can see here, you have one per project for the faculty, another project affiliated to the faculty, and we have two people, but we can't say whether the staff member one is working on project one or two or none of them. We don't know. We just know that he is working at the faculty. Or here. So you have a branch affiliated with a division, and you have staff working for a division. Can we say what branch staff is working for? No, same problem. So there are multiple branches for that division. So we will know which branch would work. So how could you solve this? Yeah, so what I suggested is to put the top objects up top, and you can see the clue here is that you have many to one. So that means that if you know the branch, you will always be able to know the division. And so if staff were associated directly with the branch, then we will know what branch this staff is working for, and since the branch would automatically identify the division, we will have it. So it's a hierarchy. So instead of having the fan, we, as you said, you reorder from top to bottom so that the fan becomes a tree. Because from the tree, we can always go up and find the links going backwards. So that is the... So this is the question. And that, what we need to do is to restructure this by saying that the division operates branches, and staff is directly affiliated with the branch. Because now you see there is no fan. It's one many, so it's a tree. You agree with me that this is a tree? Yeah, because they all have one parent and multiple siblings. So then it will be a tree. Every level has one parent and multiple siblings, so it will be a tree. So that's the way to restructure this. And then if you look at the occurrences, it will be pretty straightforward, because then all staff will be linked to one specific branch, and all branches will be linked to one specific division. So it will be easy to find both the branches that people are working for and the divisions they're working for by just going through these many-to-one relationships. So the problem is when you have too many on one step, because then you can't decide exactly which one you're referring to. So many to one will be the way to try to solve this. And you may have a little bit the same problem. Just be aware. This one, you may see this one, you may experience this one in the assignment if you aren't careful. So be aware of it. Try to make sure that you can always find building blocks. So look for if you have one to many fanning out from one component, then be careful to see if it's really the case. You will never have to find one of those directly to one of those, because if you need to, then it's not the right design. Chasm trap is something similar, but it has more to do with the certain lack of a relationship. So when there are something that is optional, a relationship that's optional, then you may lack the relationship. You may lack the connection. So, for instance, here, let's say that in this case we have projects, but project may not be led by a member of the faculty, but faculty is still responsible. So the faculty has staff, but the project may not be led by a certain staff member, but it's owned by the faculty anyway. You follow me? So faculty owns projects, and faculty has staff. Now, some staff are leads of projects, but there are some projects that aren't led by a staff. And then the question, can we find for those projects, can we find the faculty they belong to when there is no project lead that connects the two? So, here, we have project P3, doesn't have any staff. How can we find what faculty is owning P3 here? P1 and P2 are fine because they have a staff member who is project lead, and when we know the project lead, then we know the faculty. But this project, P3, doesn't have a lead, and since it doesn't have a lead, we don't know the faculty. So we have a chasm, we have a gap. Question? So the question or the comment was, isn't the project a strong entity and having its own ID, then it will solve this? Well, it does have its own primary key, but it's locking the relationship. You need, how are you going to store the relationship from project to faculty? Because in this case, the only way to store the relationship from faculty to project is to go via project lead. And if there is no project lead, you have no connecting line between the two. So it doesn't have anything to do with whether it's strong or weak. These are all strong entities because they're independent. There's no... but it's the faculty is owner of projects, and faculty has staff. Problem is that there are some projects that are defined, but they don't have any project leads for now, or the project lead may be somebody else, which is not part of the staff. And then the question is, how do we, for these projects, how do we find, you follow me? So the problem is not the IDs, it's not whether these are weak or strong. The problem is that this line here says that it's optional. It says that there may be projects that are not affiliated with a staff member. So for some projects, you can't find a staff member. And if you can't find a staff member, you don't find a faculty either. And we would like to know for all projects what faculty the project belongs to. Or different example. So we have a branch and there are staff members in the branch, and staff members may oversee certain properties. But there may be properties that are not overseen by a certain staff. Some properties have no staff to oversee the property. And then the question is, can we find what branch the property is affiliated with or belongs to? So again, here we have, for this property, it's fine. It's we have a staff member SG37 is overseeing this one, and SG37 is affiliated with branch 003. For this project, it's fine, PL94, because it's overseen by the staff SL21, and SL21 belongs to B005. Now, the problem is this property, PA14. PA14 is not overseen by anyone. And because of that missing link here, we can't say what branch this property belongs to. It's a chasm, it's a gap. That's why you call it a chasm trap, because here you can see there's a gap. There's a chasm, there is no link here. You can't jump from here to here. It's just missing the bridge or the link. So what would be the solution in this case? You can add a relation, which is what property will the branch offer? It may seem like it's redundant, because I mean, you can see here, you have here, this one would find one staff would find one branch here. So you would think that this is, because in most cases, this will replicate the other one. But for those few properties where you don't have a staff, this is the only way. So this will be necessary for those. For others, they will kind of be redundant because you will find the same thing by just going through the other relations. So then you will see here that there is a redundancy. We can go from PG36 to BO3 either this way or this way. You can see they are triangles. But for this one, the triangle is broken. That's why we need to go this way for the PA14. Question? That's what we would like to do. We would like to go from property for rent to the branch that is supposed to offer it. Because each branch in this model, if you look at the textbook, in this model, each branch has a set of properties that it will manage, that it will offer for rent. And some of these properties are managed by certain employees. And then we could use that relationship to find what branch the property belongs to, because the property is overseen by one person is in one branch, so you could find it that way. But for those properties that are not overseen by anyone, the only way to find what is the branch the property belongs to would be to have that extra. That seems redundant, but it's not for those properties that are lacking the overseas relationship. Yeah. You mean here?
Yeah.
Well, remember that the arrows, this may be a bit confusing. In conception model, you can go either way. If you remember SQL, we can do joins both ways. I mean, you can so it's fully symmetric. So you can combine anything, and you get the result. Now, these arrows here, they are just to help us to read. This arrow means that when we read this has name, it means that branch has staff. So if we change the relationship to works for or works at, so if you say that this relationship would be works at instead, then we will have to turn the arrow around, because the reading direction would then be staff works at branch. Do you follow me? So the direction of the arrow doesn't say anything about which could be the start and end of a query. It just says how are we supposed to read it in a meaningful way. So these arrows tells us that we should start by reading the sentence. When we read the relationship, we should start here. So it says overseas, it goes that way. So it means that the staff would oversee property for rent. And if you turn it around, we could say property for rent is overseen by, and then the arrow the other way, staff. So this is up to you to define which way the names of the relationships are and which way the arrows will go, as long as they communicate clearly the semantics of the relationship. Comment? The traps indeed arrive from the cardinalities. The fan trap arrives from the fact that you have an entity in the middle and you're fanning out both directions. That's the fan trap. The Chesson trap is really caused by this zero. This zero means it's optional. So it means for those where there is no such link, there's a gap. You can't get from the property to the branch because you miss this link here. So that's what's called the Chesson. So you have this gap that you can't cross. Yes, perfect. Now, when we, as I said on Tuesday, we would like to have models that are as simple as possible and that communicates what the customer is trying to get at and what we would like the developers to implement. So the textbook has a chapter on conceptual modeling that goes through how can we check and validate and review our model before we go on. Because as you probably know from Tom's course in software engineering, the larger costs, development costs, are at the end of the project. So if you need to change something after it's in production, it's very much more expensive than change it early on in the design phase. So that's why we like to do this now, early on, to remove problems, to fix issues early, rather than implement roll it out to customers, and customer telling us that we need to redo it, and then we need to change everything, and we need to have tests for all of that, and we need to think about what can we break, and how can we convert existing data and everything. So that's why we like to do this. And one-to-one relationship types. When you have a one-to-one, you know that this one always has one of these, and this one always has one of those. Then maybe we can merge them, simplify by just merging them. Why do we need two separate if they always point to the other one? So that's one thing we could go through and look for one-to-one relationships and see if they can be simplified. And we may look for redundant ways. So if you find that there are two ways, so in our Chasm example, so if we go back here to our Chasm example, if let's see, if this one would be one-to-one, if this was one-to-one, then this is clearly redundant. This is unnecessary, because then all property for rent will have a staff, all staff will have a branch. So if there was one there instead of zero, then this, the relationship we added would be redundant. So what we try to do when we verify our model is to try to see, are there multiple paths that will do exactly the same? And if that's the case, we would like to remove them, because we said before, if you have redundancy, you may have the risk of getting inconsistent data. So one path tells you one thing, another path tells you something else, and they should really tell you the same thing. So that's would be some of the parts we look for when we validate the model, to see if really all relationships are strictly necessary. They are not redundant. So if you have property for rent and lease, and we can see that the lease will always be related to a property, and we can see that the client can hold many leases, but each lease will be for a property, which means that we can always get from the client to the property through the leases. So we don't need a direct relationship from client to the property. You follow me? Because the lease is actually representing the rents relationship. The lease is exactly that. It tells you the lease number and says that this client is related to this property. So you don't need that extra relationship. It will be redundant. And those are the things that we are looking for. And sometimes it's not very clear. So sometimes you may need to look at, for instance, the time dimension. You may look at whether the information is valid in all cases. So in this case, is this redundant? So being married, a man is married to a woman, a child has this father and this mother. Now, can you infer marriage, or can you infer fathership or mothership from this? Well, most kids, I guess, quite a few, tend to be born within the marriage, but then the marriage may be broken, so later on the father may be married to somebody else than his child's mother. So remember that you have to think about, would this relationship be kind of lasting also through times and through changes? Because it can be risky, as we saw for the Chasm case, it can be risky to remove all that seem redundant. So we need to make sure that they are indeed redundant before we remove those relationships. But this is typically not so hard work. I mean, you go through and find the one-to-one relationships. You go through and looking for where you have several paths from one and the same to the others, and just make sure that these are semantically different, they aren't just redundant. But then the final step would be to actually see if the model can be used to answer the queries that we're interested in. So I think in your assignment you do have some example queries that your data model is supposed to be able to answer. And typically this is also what we will like to discuss with the customer. So what what is the use? What do they want to get out of the database? What type of queries, what type of reports would they like to see? And then that's what we want to do. Now the question is, how can we do that? Because we don't have any tables. We don't have any SQL yet. Or we can't create the SQL because we don't have tables. We only have conceptual models. And the way is to use what you call pathways. So a pathway is that we try to find a path in our graph or in our model. Think of this as have you started looking at graphs in algorithms course? No. Okay. So graphs is basically nodes that are connected with links. And in this case, we try to go through the through all the entity types over the various relationship types to see if you can connect this entity type to this entity type. Or maybe we have two or three more. So we need information from here, here, and here. Now this, we know what we need to do is to see, can we find paths in our model that would where we would be able to connect them to get the information that we need. So it's kind of similar to what we do in SQL and joins. So we are joining tables, but right now we don't have tables. We just have entity types and relationships. So what we will do is to make paths in the graph. We could do it graphically, as I'll show you on these slides, but we could also do it in text by saying, okay, starting with this node, going over this relationship to this node, this relationship to this node. And since in our model, all relationships and all entity types have names, we can identify them. So just be... If you would like to make it easy, make sure that all entity types have unique names. Don't say has. For 20 different relationships, you say has. No, because then you don't know which has you refer to and whether this has can actually connect the dots. So here, we have this fan trap that we talked about. And ideally, if we do this pathway, we should be able to find that this fan trap would stop us from answering the question. So we would like to know what projects would a certain staff member work on. So we say, okay, from staff member, I can find faculty, clearly. The question is, from faculty, can I identify the one specific project? And no, there is no link, because the only link from faculty would point to many projects, not one specific one. So I couldn't use that path to answer my question. So this is what we do. We go through the network and try to find paths that will answer our question. And there are no other links out of staff. So there are no other alternatives either. So what we have done is that we have explored all possible relationships to staff, and none of them would help us get to one specific project. They can get to a list of potential projects, but we can get to that one specific that they clearly work on. So I mean, it's a combination of going through the model, but also knowing the semantics or knowing the meaning of all the relationships. We need to take that into account. We need to know what they mean. In this case, otherwise, it might be hard to say that we don't find that one specific project. It's readable, isn't it? So this is from the textbook. So I'm just going to go through and see how this can be done. Now, you would like to list the details of staff supervised by a named supervisor at the branch. How will we do that? Can we answer this in this model? So what we like to find is staff details. So okay, so we would like to find staff details. This is in this entity type. And should be supervised by some named supervisor at the branch. And then we need to go through this relationship, supervisor's relationship, wouldn't it? So we have staff and named supervisors. We find the supervisor here, and then we find the staff. So that's how we can say, okay, going from supervisor to staff over the supervisor's relationship, we can answer this query. List details of all assistants alphabetically by name at the branch. I don't know if you looked very carefully at the model. If you haven't, this might be a bit cryptic because you don't see all the attributes here. Any ideas how we can answer this? Assistants are staff, so it's a special type of staff, and everything about staff is stored in staff. So it's just consulting the staff entity. So it's all there, so we can answer it by just looking at that one. So it's not so exciting. List the details of properties available for rent at the branch along with the owner's details. Can we do that? Where would we start? Well, obviously something with property for rent. The owner's detail. Do we have information about owners for all the properties? Yes, we have owners and owns. So by going through this, we could find all the information about the properties and owner information. You follow me? Then, details of properties managed by a named member of staff at the branch. So, details of the properties. That, I guess, should be properties for rent. Managed by staff. That's staff. And there is a relationship from staff to manage by. So manages is the inverse of managed by. So going through that relationship, we should be able to get to the information. Then finally, a list of clients whose preferences down here match a particular property. So preferences would typically be max monthly rent. How much would they want to pay monthly maximum? And that's a customer preference down here. And properties are up here. Sorry? That's just a query. So the views would link clients to property for rent, and preferences will be related to clients. So we can go through this part of the network to connect these ones. So that's how we, and that's also now how you're going to do it in the assignment. So for each of the queries, you need to assign, okay, where do I find information? 1, 2, 3, 4 entity types. And then, is it possible in my network or in your model to connect these three in a way that they will give the answer you're looking for? So that's the task. And as I said, if you want to, you could draw arrows like this graphically on top of the model for the various queries. Or you can say for this query, the path is, and then you start by naming the entity types and naming the relationships that bind them together. So you have a string of entity type name, relation type name, entity type name, relationship type name, and then you show what the connection looks like. Was that clear? Or because at this point we can't do SQL because we don't have any tables and we don't have any variables for joins. We just have the graph, the model. But we can use the graph by talking about these paths in the graph. We need to find a path. As we looked at in the Chasm and the fan trap cases, we will find that there wouldn't be a path. That was the problem. There was no path that would identify what we're looking for. So these were examples of where you didn't have a pathway. Even though it looked like from the lines, it wasn't because of the cardinalities as we established. So you need to look at cardinalities as well as the actual relationships between the nodes to clarify. And I think that's about it. So the final step will be then to review all of this with the customer. And as we've done on Tuesday and today, you could see that sometimes the requirements are ambiguous. Sometimes it's not clear. What do you mean, employee? Employee of what? This company or institutions or something else? So the best way then would be to go make these assumptions and go through the assumptions one by one with the customer and say, what is the consequence of this we are doing it? Okay, now we're just talking about employees of these institutions. Did you have some other employees in mind? Then we go on and we clarify, and we either we agree that what we did was right, or we have to make adjustments. And in the end, hopefully, this model is pretty represents pretty well what the customer wants. Not always, because the customers won't always be able to anticipate the full consequence of what they see, and sometimes they change their mind. They thought this is what they wanted, and as they're going to see your development moving ahead, they start wanting something else. So that happens. But anyway, if you have a walkthrough of the model and say, okay, this is what we agree on right now, and then whatever they ask for will be a change request that you're going to charge for separately. That's as much as I was thinking to say about this. Any questions about the entity relationship, extended entity relationship, validating conceptual models, anything of that stuff? Because next week, then Dipt is going to go into how to convert this into a relational model and how to normalize and a little bit more on the quality side when you get closer to the implementation. Okay, then I'll just say good luck with your assignment. Good, thank you.